This podcast was recorded Wednesday, October 27th at 11:30 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like someone will put it in the Ohio Constitution that trick-or-treating must happen on Halloween, not some random late October night as determined by some bureaucrat.
This annoys you every year.
It does. Absolutely. I suspect it is the root cause of Ohio's brain drain.
I'm not so sure. Either way, let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at those Snollygosters or shrewd politicians who don't dare make kids or parents choose between watching football and begging for candy. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, a little historic shade from the Tar Heel State earns our Snollygoster of the Week award.
Yeah, it does. But first, the big story this odd year election involves local school board races. All across the country, they're getting a lot of attention and attracting a lot of new candidates.
Indeed, but it's not fights over school taxes, class sizes, or the quality of school lunch pizza that is driving the
underrated
debate.
Underrated, by the way.
Nah, it's pretty bad. But it's not school lunch pizza that is driving the debate. It is, of course, what else? COVID and the culture wars.
It certainly is. Many of the first-time candidates are upset over mask and vaccine mandates, and also the possibility that teachers will more closely examine the impact of racism on our history. And they're attracting campaign donations as well, but from whom? That's a little murky.
Yes, Joe Ingles from the Ohio Public Radio State House Bureau wrote about money pouring into school board races, and she joins us on Snollygoster. Joe, welcome to Snollygoster.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
So, what's going on with all this money into school board races? What'd you find out?
Well, I found out that, first of all, school board races are supposed to be nonpartisan. Second of all, they typically, if you're elected to the school board, you're not going to get rich on that. That's just a few thousand dollars that you get a year to pay you for going to meetings and working on school board issues. But really, we're seeing people who are running for school board and they're amassing campaign contributions well in excess of anything they'd make as sitting on that board. We've seen $30,000, $40,000 in some cases to win a school board race. And the PACs that are out there, some of them report to the Secretary of State's website so that we can pull it up and see who's donating where, but some of them don't. And the reason they don't is they don't have to. Ohio law allows them to just file locally, and a lot of the local boards of elections do not put that information online, so you can't find it. Then you add to that the dark money that comes into play. And that's, you know, that seems to be in every election now. And the dark money that's coming in is coming from groups that have, you know, they really have an agenda of some sort that they're driving. We're seeing a lot of money coming in from groups that are Republican, libertarian leaning, and they're, you know, looking for more of a free market kind of thing.
Yeah, you highlighted a candidate from the Olentangy local schools north of Columbus, Jennifer Foyt. What's her story?
Well, Jennifer Foyt and another woman who's running for school board are being supported by a PAC. It's money that we don't know exactly where it's coming from, but we do know that that money is coming from, some of that money is coming in, and we've had some reports. So, for example, we know that Bridget Moreno, who is the wife of Bernie Moreno, gave a substantial amount of money to that campaign.
And Bernie Moreno is running for U.S. Senate on the Republican side. Right. Businessman from the Northeast Ohio. Yeah.
Correct. So she gave a substantial amount of money. That we know. But there's also money coming in from outside. And we know that, but we can't trace all of it.
Yeah, she mentioned FreedomWorks. It's an organization, national group that, quote, exists to build, educate, and mobilize the largest network of activists advocating for the principles of smaller government, lower taxes, free markets, personal liberty, and rule of law. Nothing there about school lunch pizza, but whatever. Maybe it's part of a smaller government.
The school lunch pizza has not come up in any of this yet. I'm waiting for it, though, because, you know, I think maybe it might at some point. You never know. Everything else seems to come up. But the big issues here are the critical race theory, which let's make that clear. No one is teaching in K through 12 mm-hmm. critical race theory, but it boils down to the catchphrase for diversity training, for equity kind of involvement in the schools.
Yeah, it's studying history through the lens of racism, basically. Yeah. Joe, you mentioned Bernie Moreno and his wife. They're not the only Senate candidates getting involved. Mike Gibbons also giving a lot to school board candidates.
Yes, he said in the forum that he was participating in on Sunday night, he said he had 73 donations in this cycle to school board candidates. Now, interestingly enough, I couldn't find them. So I called the Gibbons campaign and I said, hey, can you direct me to these donations? And they said they didn't have a list, and they said that they were private donations, so they wouldn't be made through their campaign. So they don't have a way to tell me that.
Yeah.
But this is an example of how there's hidden money out there and we're not seeing it. We might see it after the election, but right now we're not seeing a lot of the money behind these races.
Yeah, because a lot of these smaller communities, I mean, the city of Columbus, I think, and the Franklin County Board of Elections here in Columbus, probably Cuyahoga and Hamilton counties, they probably put their stuff online. But smaller communities, they're not going to, you have to go down there and pull out the old paper and pencil files or the you have them print out the documents, and that's hard to do.
And not all of them are online, even in the larger communities, I'm finding.
Yeah. Any idea if this money is having an impact?
Well,
on the campaigns?
I guess
buying signs.
We'll have to watch and see what happens on Tuesday. But I think that, you know, they're getting a lot of yard signs out there. They're getting a lot of mailings out there. With money, you're controlling the message. And you're also getting partisan R&D support. So, you know, in areas where they tend to vote Republican, if they don't know the candidate, they might choose the Republican candidate who would benefit from this. So, you know, it's just there's a whole lot of stuff going on behind the scenes in these school board races. And it's really imperative that voters actually find out about the candidates, other than the things they're seeing in mailings, other than, you know, yard signs. Really look at these candidates and see what they stand for.
Joe, the anti-mask folks have gotten a lot more headlines, quite frankly, in recent months. Yeah. Is there money pouring in from the other side? Is there a pro-mask pack, or is there pro-mask dark money coming in from, I don't know, public health groups or anybody else?
Well, there might be, but I haven't been able to find any. So, but remember, a lot of this money is coming in as dark money. So that it would be very difficult to mm-hmm. find that. We have seen it the other direction. We've up in northeast Ohio, we saw a contribution of $20,000 in one of the local school board races up there from a couple who have been vehemently opposed to wearing masks in school. So, you know, the question is, does this money affect the policy? Does it work in getting the people elected that they want elected? And where do they go from here? We've also seen this, you know, we talk about separation of church and state and not having religion in schools, but we see a lot of people who are running for school board saying they want religion in schools and they don't see that line. So that's another thing to watch here.
Yeah, that reminds me, there were some fights back in the early 90s where a lot of sort of folks who wanted more of a role of, you know, prayer in school, that kind of thing, to, they had a slate of candidates who were running for local school board races around the country, and that pops up every once in a while. You know, what I've noticed in my community, the two candidates who have been vocal against the mask mandates and want parents to have more of a choice in whether or not their child wears a mask in school, they don't actually say that in their literature. To your point, Joe, you have to look a little more closely. What the words they use are, parents should have a choice, students first, you know, liberty, that kind of thing. So that's kind of the language they're using in their mailers dropped off at the doorstep. So, and they also are the Republican endorsed candidates, to your point, and they, for first-time candidates who've never run before, there's a lot of signs and a lot of mailers supporting those candidates.
Right. And, you know, here's the other thing, Mike, if you think about this, you know, if candidates now are successful because they're very well-funded and they get in this way, it could change the future of school board races in general. And a lot of people who might run for school board, who might be actually the best people to sit on these boards, the most qualified, and have, you know, the least to actually gain or, you know, try to get out of the situation, those people might actually be shut out because they don't have a constituency behind them that's going to throw a lot of money.
Yeah. Teachers, right? I mean, people who know the most about the education system.
This will pass. I mean, the critical race theory, Mike, that debate may last a little longer. But the mask mandates and the vaccine mandates, we hope, knock on whatever that is, that COVID goes away. And then we'll have to deal with critical issues like curriculum and teacher pay and school taxes and doughy pizza at lunch and that kind of thing.
Seems like a walk in the park.
Yeah, I think it's going to stop here, though. I have a sneaking suspicion that it probably won't stop here because politics never stops.
Yeah, it's all national now. Everything's national.
There will always be an issue. It seems.
Joe Ingles from the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau talking to us about dark money entering school board races. She covered that story this week. Joe, thanks again for being on Snollygoster.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Joe.
Turning now to our weekly segment, the Snollygoster of the Week Award goes to the shrewdest or, frankly, the most entertaining political move of the week. That might be more apropos this week.
That's often how it works out. Last week, of course, we provided a critique of Ohio's new license plate, that green, blue, and yellow pastoral scene that features the Wright brothers plane and the slogan, Birthplace of Aviation.
Just imagine Julie Andrews singing and spinning on a mountainside. Well, we did not even notice that the plane was flying backwards.
No, we didn't.
many others did. It was easy to miss, but a lot of people did notice it. And the state admitted that it messed up and then turned the plane around, but not before making thousands of plates that have to be recycled, or maybe you can turn them into birdhouse lids. We did that in Boy Scouts.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure they want those plates out there because it would be collector's items. Anyway, North Carolina and its Department of Transportation noticed as well. And the state that claims on its license plates to be first in flight trolled Ohio by tweeting out, "Y'all leave Ohio alone. They wouldn't know they weren't there. Hashtag first in flight."
Of course they said y'all.
Of course.
Of course they did. Of course that is in a reference to the 118-year-old controversy over the true birthplace of aviation. Is it Dayton, Ohio, where the Wright brothers designed and built their plane, or is it Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, where they first flew it? I think North Carolina had the wind and Ohio had the plane. They built the plane. North Carolina had the breeze.
That's right. So, for not missing a chance to remind us Ohioans that the Wrights chose the sustained winds of the Outer Banks for their historic flight, this week's Snollygoster of the Week Award goes to the North Carolina Department of Transportation.
They are dredging deeply for heritage in North Carolina.
Any chance they get to tweak us.
North Carolina, you have the Outer Banks, you have mountains, you have the Blue Ridge Parkway.
You know, you'd think give
us flight.
There's a lot of Ohioans who go to North Carolina to Kitty Hawk every summer.
I got married and had my honeymoon on the Outer Banks. It's beautiful.
I was there this summer.
But they didn't invent flight. We invented flight.
And they keep picking on us. Maybe we'll go to Virginia Beach next year just for that.
We're going to boycott North Carolina now. Anyway, that will do it for this week's edition. If you have a suggestion for next week's Snollygoster of the Week, you can send it to snollygoster@wosu.org. For our web producer, Michael DeBonis, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.